This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Welcome to Pickle Me This, the officially unofficial podcast for Rick and Morty on Cartoon Network's Adult Swim. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Today we're covering Season 5, Episode 2, Mortyplicity. Here's Aaron with the recap.
The Smith family is suddenly assassinated by a team of well-armed cyber squids. Instantly, the real Rick Sanchez is informed of the murder of his decoy family, the existence of which provoking a lot of alarm and concern to the real Smith family. Which is all well and good until they too are assassinated by the squids, and the really real Rick Sanchez is informed of the murder of his decoy family. I'm sure you can see where this is going, but you probably can't guess how far it actually goes.
All right, Aaron, what'd you think of this episode?
I thought this was a great episode. This is a feels almost like a throwback to season one or two episode where they just take a concept and take it to its logical insanity breaking point. I guess they did this last episode or last season too with the time traveling snakes, where it just was snakeception. Once they started fucking with the timeline, it was just as many. It's just a million man snake. Time fuck fest, right? Well, this is a million decoy family all over the United States kind of purge session. And I just thought it was really funny, especially since they're able to, you know, put a couple of continuity teases, I guess. It feels like they're maybe openly trolling the audience, or maybe they're just teasing us for things to come. But like, and it's another thing. It's like I've been asking, how will they keep Rick on this treadmill of personal development? And I think this is one way, because Rick kind of makes personal progress throughout this episode and how he feels about his family and what he's actually looking for and what a really happy family looks like. And of course, at the end, everything's reset because it doesn't even matter. Yeah. So this show has an infinite number of ways they can do that. I thought it was really entertaining. What did you think of this clone crazy episode?
Yeah, I'm the same. I really enjoyed this episode. I like these kind of episodes that spin out a sci-fi concept as far, like, all the way to its breaking point. And then, you know, make it of no consequence to the show at large. That's kind of fun. Like you, I detected several meta jabs at the audience, several just like meta things about writing, which I always love to. You know, there's stuff in there that we'll talk about. But I found it really, really funny as well. There's so many like one-liners in there. And I don't know, that scene, it's so stupid, it's so juvenile, but God, why am I watching this show if not for a little bit of juvenile humor, right? The thing where Rick makes Morty look into his ass to prove he's not a clone, and then yeah, of course you see where it's coming a mile away, but it's still, that punchline lands. Then right after it, it's like, you thought the mere thought of being a decoy would break me? What am I, your mom? It's still just like hilarious, which I don't know, they use that, like, that stupid humor so intelligently sometimes too. That's what I like about it. It's never just like a one-off haha fart joke. It's always paired with like a 1-2 punch of Rick making a larger point. And that's pretty cool. And I just really like this episode.
Yeah, I agree. I think that this was a comically dense episode. Like, there are so many one-liners and sight gags and just them fucking with the audience that it's one of those things where it's like, it'd be a chore to recap every single one. Like, you know, like, what are the hundreds of things that are funny in this episode? But shit, I guess that's what we're going to try to do. Before we get into the in-depth episode discussion, let's take a quick break.
Hey there.
Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and ball move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of bald movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
All right, I want to come back and talk about the main course, which is essentially the entire episode. There wasn't really an A plot or B plot. There's an A, B, C, all the way through X, Y, Z plot of like all the different fake or decoy or clone or perhaps actual family. But I want to talk about this because this is a very fun concept, but it's one of those things where the series is a little bit at odds with each other. And I'd see a little bit of a fracturing of the fan base whenever I go in the Rick and Morty communities, because there's people saying this is the greatest episode of all time. There's people saying this episode was boring and predictable and repetitive and distressingly doesn't really give us a glimpse into what's going on with Rick and Morty and the family, and why are they just teasing us about Space Beth and Rick's wife and stuff like that. Is there a risk of introducing so many ways to tell the audience that none of these characters really matter, none of them are really real, and none of them are really worth engaging in a long time, that like it actually turns people off midway through the series life?
I'm sure some people. Yeah. Definitely not me, though. I don't know. You got to look at yourself and you're getting all riled up about this and ask, why do they keep teasing us with all this stuff? Well, it's because you're getting on message boards and you're posting about how pissed off you are that they keep teasing you and won't give you the thing you want. If you did less of that, they might be more inclined. A, you might be more inclined to enjoy the fucking show. And B, they might be more inclined to actually do the thing instead of keep taking shots at you in the episodes. So don't know. I mean, just enjoy the show for what it is. Don't get too hung up in what you want the show to be.
Especially since I think it's fair to say that there is at least a little bit of troll, probably a lot of bit of troll, and everyone involved in the creation and manufacturing of these episodes.
For sure.
So like Yeah, if you're on message boards frantically asking, you know, oh, content daddy, give me more answers. Right. I think they're probably less likely to oblige you than if you, I don't know, if you start feigning indifference, then maybe that you might have them by the balls. But
no, not really. But at least you'll have a better time with it.
Yeah, you might play that reverse psychology kind of route. But I don't know. I don't even know if some of this stuff is, because there's some stuff that's definitely trolling the audience, which we're going to talk about later. But I think some of this stuff is just, they're aware of the space bet. Like we talked about this last episode, they're aware that space bet is out there and they haven't forgotten about it. It's just that they are trying to do a couple things in this show. One of it, what Itch is saying something profound, I think, about, you know, people that are bad people that are trying to recover from it, but also they're just trying to be funny and be really silly and stupid with science fiction concepts. And they can't just run off and do myth arc episodes. They need to do some just goof of the week stuff. So, I do also really like, this is something that Rick and Morty is starting to get a bit of a reputation is for interest. Debuting interesting ideas just as like a stinger to introduce the episode with, and then just completely forgetting about it. Like this episode begins with the premise that they're going to go kill the Judean Christian God, who is revealed to be a real thing but sleeping, and they're going to whack him Hitman style. And I'm like, oh boy, this is going to be a fun episode of Rick and Morty. But it's kind of like the crushing the mermaid puss from that one Rick Lantis episode that just became that was just the thing that delivered one of the great all time Council of Rick episodes. The murdering of God and Jerry's interview is just a sabo round that the rest of the episode is going to be delivered in.
And I love the way that they use that to lead into the decoy stuff, but then they use the decoy stuff. There's a line in there, a meta thing about like, well, we tried to write a decoy episode and it was really fucking hard and we couldn't quite break it. So we're just using this as an lead into interdimensional cable, and they flip on the TV and watch Winwolf. And then that all goes by the wayside and they do the actual fucking decoy episode, which I just loved. I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, it's funny because they kind of got me on both of those things. Like, oh, okay, they're going to go kill Yahweh. Well, that's interesting. And then, oh, okay, I'm sitting down for this decoy stuff and several layers of decoy. And then I'm like, oh, this is a funny way to start an interdimensional cable episode, because this is all kind of interdimensional cable-y anyway. And when especially say, oh, I just saw it as a way to what does he said? It's a I saw it was a kinetic way to introduce the high concept episode of something. I just thought that was the kinetic mislead into another special episode of interdimensional cable.
It's good.
And they start like, Winwolf is a great start towards an IDC episode, and then they pull the rug out from me under us a final time. It was all good stuff.
What do you feel about the interdimensional cable drip feed that we're getting? Because I wonder if this is going to be a weekly thing. In the first episode, we had the N69 stuff. In this episode, we're getting Winwolf. I feel like they're drip feeding out an interdimensional cable throughout the season. And I will say, so far, it does not feel nearly as satisfying.
Agreed. I think we might have mentioned this last episode or maybe even the last season, where it's like, how would we feel about just that? Like, instead of them having to do all the, what if they just did, you know, in passing in the background, you know, there's 1 or 2 minutes each episode. At the end of a 10 episode run, you've almost got a whole episode of interdimensional cable.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It does feel like there's something missing. Because like I don't even know that the thing that I love about the interdimensional cable episodes is that they're largely improvised. Like the A plot, the IDC plot is it's just Roiland and Harmon getting into a booth drunk and saying stupid shit until the animators have something to work with. Right.
Yeah.
Winwolf was written. Winwolf feels very writerly. Nintendo 64 might have been like throwing darts on the idea board until something made everybody laugh, but there wasn't that kind of improv quality. And I think that's what's missing.
And I think the idea that you can't really settle in and say, okay, this is a big interdimensional cable episode where I can sit down and I can watch it for what it is and just enjoy it. Because this show is a mile a minute, right? The show, it's hilarious. They mention Westworld in this and they take 20 minutes to do what Westworld hasn't been able to do in 30 plus hours. So to me, it's hilarious. Like, I don't know how fast the show moves. And if you drip feed out interdimensional cable like that, you never get in the mode of watching interdimensional cable. You're sort of like in the follow the plot mode, right?
Right.
And trying to keep up with this show. And I don't know. I find it not as satisfying so far. My opinion might change next week. Who knows? Maybe they'll do like a extended 3-minute thing on interdimensional cable and I'll have my fill. But as it stands now, yeah, I could use a full episode of interdimensional cable instead of this drip feed.
I wonder if this is really afraid of burning that concept out. Like,
could be. Yeah.
If you did an IDC every year without, like, it's harder than you think to be like, think of a random thing, ha ha ha, you know. Then again, like, why the hell is Justin Roiland like went to improv classes all those years and served all those years with improv troops if they didn't want to rise to that occasion? So, yeah, I hope we get. I hope all of this is misdirection. A kinetic mislead into an actual special episode.
Yeah.
Collectively, all these things are going to start working. I did like the thing that really tickled me is Rick's first inclination that something is not right in the episode is Jerry getting a job interview.
To me, it was, that. Like, I'm watching this and I'm thinking something isn't right here. And I realized it as soon as they told Summer to fuck off. I was like, that's not right. After last episode, that makes no sense.
Right.
And I was like, right. Boy, did they just fuck up their canon here? And then, you know, 2 minutes later, it's revealed they're a decoy family and they're dead. So fine.
But then I do think Rick intentionally put Summer and Morty against each other, like has them constantly vying for his attentions and affections as a way to kind of keep the dominant hand himself. But like, yeah, that was kind of shocking, too. Like, we just talked last week about how Summer is the more reliable of the two grandchildren now, which makes a lot of
more
sense,
badass,
I think.
Too.
Yeah, she's older, more capable. But yeah, it was a little bracing, the fact that she was called out and shut down so hard. Did you get all the dick and boob jokes and the passwords that Rick used? Like, one of his shutdown, his analysis mode shutdowns was 80085, which is boobs on a calculator.
Oh, no.
And then his other one was 8 equal sign, equal sign, equal sign D, which is literally just a giant boner.
Right.
If you type it out.
No, I didn't catch that. That's funny.
Yeah. And there's a lot of stuff like, and I don't know what it means. Like, as the episode goes on, some of the stuff you see in the first, like, you're not really sure what it all means. For example, like, what does it mean when an exact clone of an exact clone of an exact clone of Rick makes an exact replica of the house? Does Morty actually have a skeet shirt with the words Yosemite on it? Or was this an example of a Rick getting lazy, just improvising?
Could be. Yeah. Like I don't think anything is meant to be integrated back into the Rick, the C-137 Rick and
right.
Morty. Yeah. Well, Morty's right. Not even C-137 at this point.
They also do that thing where Rick's constantly making up rules like, you know, the duplicates are harmless and the duplicates can't make more duplicates of themselves. And as soon as you find out the duplicates can make more duplicates of themselves, he still is like, but the duplicates, it doesn't matter because the duplicates are harmless. I always think that that's funny and the family's reaction to it. Especially when he starts layering on more stuff like, oh, because I think at one point he claims that they like can't leave Earth. And they can't engage with long-term continuity, which I saw there's a thread on Reddit where people are trying to parse that to see which is the real, like as ultimate proof that the final Rick family coming home with Space Beth is the real Rick. But like, again, I don't even know what the fuck that means. Like,
yeah.
Is this the real Rick who's fallen in love with his family? And we're going to find out in season 7 was a clone that he replaced himself in season 3. After he fucked a planet and almost blew his brains out, had to get his mind right. Like, you know, spent the last 7 years fighting the alternative reality Federation war with Birdman. Like, none of this stuff matters, which means all of it does, I guess. So that's
yeah,
like you're not the or it's this Warhammer canon concept of like everything is canon, but not everything is like true. Like all these things are actually happening, but what they say about the Rick Prime family is maybe nothing, but also like because even in this episode, there's a Rick that says like the Muppet Rick. says, hey, just know that they're like a part of Rick that created me is inside me who can hear that criticism and say he's sorry. Like, that's kind of the show saying that it doesn't not matter, right?
Yeah, and I think like everything you're seeing here is a part of Rick. Yeah, because these are perfect. Well, some less perfect. There's a lot of lazy creation here, which we'll get to.
Right.
But you know, every Rick is going to infuse themselves with the thing that makes them Rick, right? And or infuse their decoy with it. So everything that the decoys do is sort of influenced by the way that Rick would feel about a situation, even if, you know, they might be made out of straw in a barrel or something instead of human flesh. And robotics. So I think like everything you see on the screen happen, you can sort of attribute as like a piece of the real Rick, whatever you want to call that. It's just maybe that particular Rick wouldn't express it that way because, you know, experiences diverge, right? That's the thing with clones. Like, even if you've got a perfect clone of yourself and a perfect memory implantation or whatever, you're still going to diverge because you now have different experiences because you're two different beings. So all these Ricks might express themselves differently, but I don't know. I mean, I guess that depends on how long the decoys have been out there. Like, is there any indication in this episode? Have they been out there for years? Have they been out there for days?
I feel like this is where like Fizzini and the Princess Bride, where it's like we're like, you know, hey, there's an infinity of Smiths, which means that none of this stuff matters. But on the other hand, they're all like prisms of the truth that we're seeing. So like maybe they all matter. But on the other hand, I'm basing that on what a clone said. And like if he's there's two different instances of things that can make a clone go bad, either Rick going lazy or just a copy of the copy. So maybe this is a degenerate version of Rick, which means he wouldn't actually.
Never get into a clone war in Asia. That's what I learned.
Yeah. And in Southwest United States, because not even the president of the United States will give a shit about that.
True.
As far as I know, this Asimov cascade thing is not a real concept.
I don't think so.
It's something that Rick and Morty made people Google for in the wee hours of the morning last night. But it's not like that. There is like the Asimov's law of robotics is a thing. Mm-hmm. And I think they're just trying to go with kind of like because these were all broadly speaking some form of automaton. They weren't clones necessarily.
Yeah,
so I think they're going for that. And in the cascade, I mean, they explain that with the fucking whiteboard. Mm-hmm. But if anyone was curious about what an Asimov cascade is, it's nothing. It's this. It's this episode is what it is.
Yeah, they've defined it. There is in that scene, there is a hilarious meta moment. In my opinion, I don't know. I really love it. Where the writers come in and Jerry suggests they all split up and they you know, tackle this from two different ends. And then Rick's like, are you kidding me? We're going to engage in B stories that we'll have to track in simultaneously. No, thank you. And that's like the writers speaking through Rick.
Yeah, yeah.
But look, we've already got this fucking crazy complicated decoy episode. We are not doing B stories.
Yeah, it reminds me of the episode where the twins indecision or the Summer and Morty's indecision split time into first two and then four and then which is one of my favorite episodes, but they kind of had that callback in the Rick trying to diabolically game plan the other Rick's mental state. It's like it's classic Prisoner's Dilemma, Beth. Sure, I'm a stable guy, I can talk things out, but this raving asshole over there. And as the Ricks are finishing each other's sentences, talking about the inescapable logic that, like, you know, we're only seconds away from that guy finding out he's a Rick and a clone, which will make him desperate to kill us. And I fucking love how Rick is so amoral and maniacal that like he instantly is like the worst version of every Nash equilibrium you could ever think of in any kind of negotiation or brinksmanship thing. It's really funny.
There's kind of, it's kind of a beautiful twisted line when he looks at Morty and he says, "Do you trust me not to kill you?" Because you got the Rick that you want to trust, who's going to lead you into this firefight. It's like this, I don't know, it's this weird dual meaning thing where, like, no, Morty doesn't trust Rick not to kill him. He's killed him many times. But also he needs to trust this particular Rick that this is the right course of action and not get them all killed. I don't know. It was good.
Yeah. And there's the thing is I don't even know how clever this show is sometimes, because, like, I also love the idea that Rick kind of rhetorically says, "I don't trust me. Do you trust you?" And Morty, with his foolish optimism, says, yes, he does trust Morty that when the chips are down, not to mindlessly kill each other. Mm-hmm. But later in the episode, we know that two Mortys go into the kitchen, only one comes out. So it's like, True. Is that a sly way of showing that Morty is optimist? Yes, but also a huge dumbass that can't ever be trusted to make real decisions about anything.
I suppose so.
Because Morty, I mean, that's like, which is the biggest asshole? Like Rick, that's like gleefully admits that, yeah, he'd kill the other Rick because it's the inevitable thing. You got to do it. Or Morty, who is optimistic but delusional about what he'd actually do in that situation.
Yeah.
You know, like Rick's an asshole, but he's an honest asshole, essentially.
Right.
I also love how when he's trying to brainstorm of reasons why these squids would be assassinating him, he just comes up with three different ways to brag about his penis. Right. Well, it could be my penis size, or maybe I had sex with their queen, or, you know, I do have the huge penis. The list just goes on and on. It's great. A great killtage, like one of the all-time great, just like, you know, interdimensional cable type of, you know, Rick fishing through his brains for a decoy chip, camo Rick hiding out with wall paint camo while two Ricks are I kind of love that shit. And how every time they smash cut back to a new Rick family, I was actually looking for like, oh yeah, this is the real Rick Sanchez and the real Smith family. Right.
Yeah. I was doing that too.
And like, I felt like the last time they got me is when they went to go live off the grid, like libertarians, and got kidnapped by cause I'm like, okay. Yeah. But then when they kicked off the Rickest Rick plot with the Star Fox boss hologram shit, yeah, season four callback, I think I felt like that because, yeah, that's the Rickest Rick move, to call everybody else out. And it just kept, it's fucking just kept on. I don't even know how many times they do that where but they stopped getting me after that one. I think it was the last time they actually got me, but I don't know why I'm bragging, because it was like 17 minutes into the episode.
right. I mean, that's look, as much as I want to tell everybody, just cool out, baby, just be cool and enjoy the show. Look, I'm looking for that stuff too, right? I'm in there going, okay, let me settle in here and find the Rick that I know and the Morty that I know and the Summer that I, all those characters that I want to succeed above all other Ricks and Mortys. But I don't know. The show repeatedly smacks you in the face when you try and do that. So
yeah. But that Rick, like, it's so much great Westworld callbacks. As we're kind of going through a renaissance of science fiction, like, I think that this is going to keep this show's gas tank full for a while to come, because, like, up until now, they've been essentially going through the 80s and 90s sci-fi tropes. Well, now we're getting into what all those different Rick droids pinned against a wall and dissected is something straight out of like Westworld, and how it just keeps panning over until it gets like essentially crayon drawing robots of things that can't possibly work. And it's like, my God, what do these guys look like in the field? I thought that stuff was really funny, leading to the rule 34 of an Asimov cascade, which is the rule 34 of the internet, if you're fortunate enough not to know it, is essentially, if you can imagine a thing, there is porn of that thing on the internet. And this is the corollary to the Asimov cascade, which is, if you're dueling with a bunch of clones, any place you can think of as a hiding place, they can think of as a searching place. So it's just a matter of time before they get you.
Yeah.
The shot of Jerry. I thought this was really funny about I want to experience a baseball game at every major league baseball park because I've got a good friend that actually has that as a bucket list item.
Oh, yeah. That's fine when you're not being actively hunted, I suppose.
But. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like this is I think it's a little poking fun of like this is like a quintessential white suburban guy kind of like.
Yeah, it's like bucket skydiving, list thing, right?
Yeah. Riding a mechanical bull kind of thing. Sure. And like the Jerry would have it, I think it's funny. And I've felt the lash of this show's humor a time or two. They've said some unkind things about podcasting as a profession and a career. So yeah, don't feel bad if that's on your bucket list, but it's really funny that to me specifically that got called out.
I want to go back real quick because my absolute favorite part of the episode and one of my all time favorite Rick and Morty things, I think, is this skin suit Rick that's happening here. The one who's like, I guess made out of potato sacks and like, I don't know. He's rotting. It's real bad. It's all bad, but it's beautiful in its, demented, twisted nature. I don't know. These are the kind of things I live for with Rick and Morty when they go real fucked up. And this is about as fucked up as it gets with a potato sack version of Rick wearing the human skin and peeling it off of these other Ricks. I don't know what he's doing to the straw and barrel Rick because that Rick doesn't have any skin, never did. I don't know what he's getting out of that, but it's something perverse.
Yeah, he's just studying him. And I also like how once they rescue skinless Rick, like he keeps on like, first of all, he's got the skin like up around his waist and then he's like got it like it's on, but he's just kind of wearing it like a robe and he's like he's freezing and he's holding it shut. I thought that was really funny, too.
It's so fucked up. I love it.
And then the Rickest Rick that call of the clones anyway, that calls out all the others. I like how he's got ropes of cyber intestines from the other decoys like looped around his neck and and like this whole family's so fucking primal. Like the summer, the weak summer tries to get the strong summer to engage in Molly, but she just gets fucking Saving Private Ryan stabbed, like slow motion stabbed in the heart.
Yeah,
I liked all that stuff. And then like the Rickest Rick realizing how much he loves his family when they're part of his adventures, but then they get assassinated at the last minute. It's a great way to end the episode. Do you want to talk about the stinger? Maybe that's something we can talk about because
that's great.
A lot of people said that this is the all time greatest stingers. I thought it was okay. I didn't know that it was that great, but sure, an immortal wooden Jerry being essentially persecuted through time.
As I guess the planet changes hands. With a bunch of different alien species that either re-evolve or land here. I'd probably re-evolve given the primitive nature of them.
Yeah, like the things inevitable in Earth culture seem to be Christianity and cowboys. Those are the two things that no matter how many times you shuffle the card deck, you're always going to get those things top deck. The thing that I thought elevated it from just a ho-hum an outro to a great one is the callback to Highlander, because that the stinger is scored to the ballad that the Queen wrote for Highlander, who wants to live forever.
Wow, I didn't notice that. Okay.
Yeah, the Freddie Mercury crooning, who really wants to live forever, as Jerry is eternally tortured again and again. I thought it was pretty fucking good. I want to move on to a discussion. We've touched on a lot of these topics, but just kind of to get them together one place. Instances where the writer's room is for sure trolling us. Mm-hmm. Okay. I think that all references to Space Beth, including a final actual appearance that's just essentially a cameo, is an instance of that. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that like one of the clones refers like that we come into a conversation in the middle of it. And Rick's like, OK, if you really want me to talk about Beth's mother right before they're incinerated by the decoy squids. Yeah. I like that because to me, it's reassuring because they're essentially saying, hey, we know you want to know about this and we're probably giving it a lot of serious thought. But also, it's kind of fun to dick with you guys about it and to like introduce, like, one of these days they're going to introduce the most amazing episode of all time that like solves all questions about Morty, blah, blah, blah. And then at the very end, like maybe even the Stinger is going to recontextualize it as Rick running an infinite Rick simulator to find, like, he's trying to find like his personal best, I don't know, life to lead or something. And he discards that episode as preposterous or whatever. Like, they're going to do something along those lines before they're done with the 7-season contract, I think.
They should do it as an entire season. They should give an entire season of continuity based Rick and Morty timeline stuff that then they pull the rug out from under in the final episode.
Pull a Dallas where it's all just at the end. It's all just an interdimensional cable show.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Oh my God. I thought a whole episode would get, but I think they got so many episodes to do, man. Yeah, season 9. Why the fuck not? And then knock everyone's socks off and see. Because I mean, that'd be the way to do it. Is like if they did something like that in season 9. Like everyone agrees that it's an amazing season and it's the best way the show could go out. And then they just torch it and burn it down. And then it's that much harder to do season 10, right?
Yeah.
what a fucking risk. What if you burn it down and you only come up with something 90% as good as the first one?
Yeah, that's the risk. Or how about this? Okay, because everybody's going to be looking for it, right? If you do an entire season of continuity-based stuff, it's going to be so out of the norm for Rick and Morty that they're going to be like, what is good? Something's not right here. I'm not believing this. I'm not buying it. But then they just carry it all the way through to the end of the show. And the rest of the, like, they do the final two seasons as pure continuity and all of it matters. And they pull the rug out from you that way.
I think that's the best way to do it if you're going to do it. But the challenge is you have to, on the real timeline, knock everyone's socks off. Like you can't. Yeah. Like if you're going to do that, you have to deliver. I mean, you don't have to. I mean, shit. Game of Thrones, you know, shit to bed right at the end zone and they're giving them a prequel and everyone's probably going to come back and try to check it out and all that kind of stuff. So it's like, I don't know. And that's the thing is like 10 seasons in, even if Harmon and Roiland literally shit to bed, like literally just filmed 10 hours of them shitting the bed, rolling in their own shit, which is something Justin Roiland might fucking do.
He would love to, I'm sure. Yeah.
There would be people being like, oh God, this is genius. This is the best. This is, you know, like, and it might be. I don't know. I'm starting to talk myself into that.
That's the thing, though. I'm looking at this show and I'm thinking, okay, we're immersed here in the thing that Rick and Morty is doing, the discussion around it with the audience and their expectations and the way that the show is playing with that. 10 years down the line, 15, 20 years down the line, who comes back to this show and has any understanding of any of that stuff? Like all of these jokes, these meta jokes that they're doing about the audience's impatience and, you know, the what's canon and what isn't. I feel like all that's going to be lost. It's going to be kind of dead weight in the show where people are just not going to understand it in the future.
Maybe. But I feel like, I don't know, if you go in like blind and you don't know anything about Rick and Morty and you're watching like episode like season 5, like, to the extent that you're caught up in things like Evil Morty and Space Beth, you probably will be now. And like when you see that called back, you're like, oh, they're going to answer it. And then it just keeps hilarious. I mean, maybe it would still work.
Some of it, I'm pretty sure definitely won't.
But also, it's like you get a little bit of an advantage on a show this referentially heavy because people kind of like have one eye on the Wikipedia. Because they're, you know, like you might have seen a lot of 80s and 90s science fiction, but there's no fucking way you've seen every single thing that they reference. No. So like there's got to be some video game that you're looking up or some obscure novel or science fiction concept. So it's like maybe like if you're doing that and they encourage that in the audience that like people are going to be hunting for references and they like the audience expectation references one other thing that they can look up and put into context. I don't know.
Is that being recorded anywhere? I guess like in the histories of Reddit and shit.
But I mean, every fucking show that's got more than three people watching it has a Wikipedia, and Rick and the Rick and Morty one is no. In fact, it's one.
Oh
of
yeah,
the more
I'm talking about
ones.
The meta though of like what was the audience's attitude at this given point. I don't know that that's going to be easily found.
You're right. That's not like cataloged in like in episode 5 or season 5, episode 2. The audience was was rabid for more information about Space Beth and Roiland and Harmon, what they did here. Yeah, you're right. You might
have to go look through the history of Reddit and just follow that at the same time you watch the show. That's too much work. No one's going to do that.
Yeah, 30 years from now, they'll be like, you know, you got to watch this 5-hour oral history of Rick and Morty fandom that talks about the Szechuan Wars, goes into the Wienermobile incident of 2023. And only then can you watch the series and really understand what was going on. Yeah, it'll be the ultimate companion.
All right. Coming to baldmove.com in 2028.
I will definitely cash in on that. What is up with Mr. Always Wants to Be Hunted?
I'm not allowed to question it, apparently. Rick will shout at me if I do. But then he'll also have another version of him will also be infuriatingly curious about it.
Yeah, exactly. That's, oh my God, you just nailed it, because he does both of those things. Like, I felt like a Jerry for wanting to know more about Mr. Always Wants to Be Hunted, but then Rick himself wanted to know about it. I feel like he's kind of the same species as Mr. Poopy Butthole.
Uh-huh. Looks like a
it's
lot
a
like
Mr.
Him.
Species. Kind of looks a lot like Noob Noob, but Noob Noob's not Mr. Noob Noob. So I'm going that there is a species, a Mr. Species here that has something common with the Mr. Butthole, Mr. Poopy Butthole, but not Mr. Meeseeks. I don't think Mr. Meeseeks is part of the same species. So.
I don't think so.
We need some kind of way to tell them apart. But yeah, I wondered if they're, I thought that they were doing something interesting with Mr. Poopy Butthole, but apparently not.
What happens if you hunt him to completion?
What is hunting to completion? Yeah, what does that even mean?
Killing him, I assume, but
I guess. But I've always heard to completion, like that's always to involves a sex act
for sure.
So like, yeah, I guess if you hunt him to completion, then you actually murder him. But why not? It seems like that's what he wanted to do. It would have saved at least one more decoy Rick. But
is he like a boss where he's got three stages? Like you hunt him to completion and then he comes back and he's like a second stage where he's twice as big.
He changes color and he moves twice as fast and has a slightly different attack pattern. And then, the third phase is the real bitch. That's where he comes back to size of the Empire State Building. And
right.
Music's playing at 3/4 speed. I want to talk about some callbacks to other episodes that I was able to either determine myself or steal off of Reddit. Okay. First off, you know, in real life, we had a presidential election. I'm not sure if you guys heard of this. We got a new president. And I was wondering this season whether they would acknowledge that or do something like, you know, have a different president. But no, we still got Keith David coming back for his second presidential term. I like that. I like that they're keeping the rivalry going with these two characters.
Mm-hmm.
I really like Keith David. And I like the idea. I like him being like not giving a shit about the Southwest because nobody voted for him over there. And then the Secret Service agent trying to lecture him on the purpose of the Electoral College is like, what is it, to preserve slavery? Yes, right. I read Wikipedia too. I thought that was really pretty funny.
Yeah, it is. And I guess then, there's still some like Rick imposed truce here between them. Like, just stay out of our business, we'll stay out of yours kind of thing.
Yeah, he's trying to stay neutral. I hope we do get another. I feel like Keith David showing up in the season is a pretty good indicator that we'll get another episode, because why bring him in just for, you know, 30 seconds of dialogue?
Yeah, I hope so.
I like to think that they brought they brought him back for a whole other episode.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I love just an episode later, we get a Rick trying to bite the suicide tooth. And the Rick one rung on the clone totem pole bit higher than him bites an anti tooth that completely neutralizes it. Fucking brilliant. That was one of the bigger laughs for me on the episode.
Is there a Gungans Star Wars Battle of Naboo type thing happening here with this force shield? Because like Summer has a dual lightsaber, like a Darth Maul type thing at the end of this. I think there's a little bit of that going on. You know, them all being clones. Well, Not on the Gungan battle, but, you know, it's a Star Wars milieu here.
Yeah. I get that. They should have had the shield-bearing Brontosauruses. That right. would have been a lock. And the other callback is the last season, the one episode where Rick and Morty crash land on the alien world where there was facehuggers were taking them over.
Mm-hmm.
And Rick and them, they tried to finesse their way out and it didn't work. And Rick had to do a necessarily badass armoring scene where they all turned into mini Voltrons and had swords. Morty complained about his sword. He wanted a laser whip.
Mm-hmm.
And Rick said, all right, next time, but you're just going to cut your dick off with it. Well, Morty got his laser whip. No word nice. On whether he cut his dick off. And if he did, it's just a clone. So it doesn't really matter.
True.
But I thought that was a nice little callback.
Mm-hmm. All right. The one place where this might matter. I don't know if this is happening in a bunch of different dimensions and the Ricks are coming to kill other Ricks and families in other dimensions, or if this is all on mm-hmm. like the planet Earth in a single dimension, but will there be fallout from this that the real are, you know, Rick and Morty and family need to deal with?
I don't know, because we already had a way to have infinite Ricks mm-hmm. with a different dimensional. Now we've got a way to have a near infinite Ricks inside a single, you know, slice of the finite space time arc curve. I don't know. That's a good question, because they're coming back realizing that something is amiss. I bet that there is going to be a funny reference later on where like a Rick at a Citadel of Rick will refer to like the decoy incident.
Yeah.
Like, I think we all learned our lesson from the decoy incident that we can't be too paranoid or something along those lines.
Right. It'd be nice which to have I guess something.
Yeah, that's another thing that and if you're tracking like Rick's personal growth, you know, it's something that we talked a lot about in the early seasons of this is like, you know, does Rick love his family, et cetera? What does that even mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I thought Beth made a pretty good point about, you know, you claim that the family is a burden to you, and yet you created an ocean of us out of a crazy fear of losing it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the one that the Muppet Beth said that actually landed home. But I thought that was a pretty interesting argument that for someone who claims that this is all just a bunch of bullshit, he'd be rather off. He makes an infinity of them just to keep him safe.
Yeah.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering the Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwe is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain, featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, With Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Okay, let's pivot to feedback. We had a person take us up on the offer last week. The proposition's this. You send an email, rickandmorty@baldmove.com. Maybe we read it. Chad from Dubai sent in the following. I've been listening since 2017 to Bald Move. Well, thank you. Thank you for that 4 years of solidarity and loyalty. So one thing that really struck me about this episode was how it explored the butterfly slash ripple effect. Ah, chaos theory. How one action might be minute and inconsequential to you, but it could have an insane ramification for someone else's life. One of the things that I've been thinking about over and over through this pandemic is how whatever the inciting incident was, lab leak, someone ate an armadillo or bat, it fucked up the entire world and for a lot of families for generations to come. And I think that's fascinating and insane. How one thing, one single decision in one far off corner of the world can quickly envelop all 8 billion of us. I can't quite wrap my head around that. Anyway, just love seeing it outline this episode. Thanks and keep the cast coming.
Yeah, it's for the season 5 episode 1, right? With the time dilation stuff.
Yeah. And like the runaway, how we talked about how you don't necessarily want to create a mortal enemy when you're creating a mortal enemy. Mm-hmm. I mean, and this is just the stuff that we choose. Like, we don't know what happened billions of years ago that's going to send a comet to smack Earth in 50 years and wipe us all out, you know? Like, it's one thing to think about the individual choices we make, but think about, like, all the things that happen due to no choice, just random-ass fucking, you know, chance. Mm-hmm. And then that's one of the cool things I think that Rick and Morty explores is the fundamental, like, it goes where a lot of other shows, I think, are too afraid, you know, to, like, really deal with a cold, unfeeling universe.
For sure.
I guess it's easier to do that when you're a comedy, when you're a zany comedy.
Yeah.
Then.
And also when you. Yeah, I don't. There's something about animation that seems a little simpler. And when you have all these crazy, like, aliens and you can do basically anything, right? You can make this sort of a fantasy thing instead of, like, trying to make it pure sci-fi.
Hmm. It's interesting to see everything kind of, like, feeding into each other because, like, you know, Rick, you mentioned you can get away with this animation. You're right. Like, you literally can get away with things in animation that you would never, like, I saw some stuff. I know you haven't seen it yet, but when we watch Invincible, some of the shit that goes on in that, you just couldn't film in reality. Like, they would just shut you down because of how fucking crazy it is. You know, and I think Rick and Morty, you see, like, how much people just get torn in half and organs get thrown out and, like, just just bizarre, cruel, terrible, Lovecraftian things happen. And no one bats an eye because at the end of the day, it's just a bunch of you know, pencil and ink, right?
Or even just the idea of how much you can feasibly do, right? Like Rick and Morty throws, it'll create an entire set. Like I'm thinking of that Italy vacation set where it'll create a whole set, multiple locations, indoors, outdoors, and it'll blow it up in 5 seconds because it took an animator, you know, less than a day to draw. So I don't know. The stuff you can do in animation just kind of kicks the doors open. Imagination wise,
especially since they're getting so good with procedural stuff, like, you know, the South Park guys have their shit down to where they can literally write an episode and animate it less than like 48 hours later. I wonder, as I've seen a couple behind the scenes of Rick and Morty, and I know they do a lot, you know, obviously their stuff is more intricate than the South Park pseudo, you know, paper mache shit.
For sure.
But I wondered when I saw all of the jet, like, is it possible that they can insert like a minute of television time into an episode? Because I thought it was pretty actually crazy. Now that we're in a feedback section, we can just talk amongst ourselves. I thought it was crazy how they included the references to Space Rick and to Rick's wife, like, after a week of so many people kind of bitching and moaning about not getting anything and like, oh, it's fun. Like, it would be really funny if they had the ability to just, hey, jump in the booth and say two sentences of dialogue and we've got this procedural thing that automatically. I wonder if they have that capacity because it felt like a really fast turnaround. But on the other hand, they probably could anticipate the curiosity, right? They've had 5 years of dealing with us nut jobs. So
what is the state of animation currently? I know South Park was pushing that stuff forward, but I think Rick and Morty has adopted computer animation at this point. Like they're not doing the hand drawn shit they were doing way back in the early seasons.
But they are like it's like hand animated, but I guess they use like software to interpret, so they don't have to like literally animate. Like, they don't have to do like backgrounds and things like that. But there's also like, you know, instead of having to animate every frame, maybe you animate every 5 frames and the computer interpolates and then you kind of tweak. It's essentially a lot of AI assisted animation. The stuff that you'd normally hand to like this in the old days, you had the master animators like draw the keyframes and they'd pass it off to the animating slaves that would just work in droves to fill. Now you just essentially like, do that to a piece of software.
Isn't this the natural end game for Rick and Morty? Isn't season 10 just going to be totally created by an AI? Is that where we're going? I hope that's where we're going.
It would be funny if they had some kind of natural learning algorithm. You feed all of this. I don't know about a whole season, but I would definitely love to see if you fed in every Rick and Morty script into one of those things and just had it.
Oh, God. Yeah, like an interdimensional cable episode, except just created by an AI. Just feed it in and let it spit out whatever.
Yeah, instead of being created by alcohol, it's created by just a purely AI construct. I think that would be really funny. I think that would be really cool.
As an experiment, I would love to see it. You know what else I would love to see is we talked about chaos theory, but we're kind of talking about it on an individual level and sort of like a random chance level. I would like to see collective sort of like species level chaos theory, right? Like, what are we doing as human beings that is changing the universe or changing our futures in unforeseeable ways? Like, there's not a lot of fiction that explores that type of stuff until you get to like some of the really epic novel stuff, you know? And even then it's not couched in like chaos theory. It's couched more in like, oh, let's just follow it over the course of generations. It doesn't really like try and say, hey, because you did this back then, it's spun out into all the stuff we couldn't foresee.
Yeah, you have like, I mean, there's like The Sound of Thunder, I think, is about the guy who goes back to hunt a dinosaur, steps on a butterfly accidentally and comes back.
Even that's
and,
like, individual. Like, what I'm saying is like, what am I doing today that's an individual choice, but it's being made by so many people that it's changing the future of humanity in ways that are unforeseen? Because like
eating
all that's
meat.
Happening every single day.
Exactly. You're right.
Oh, because like, because, you know, I made the choice to drink a Coke this morning, along with 52 million other people on the planet. What did that do? You know,
here's an example. I just read an article in the New York Times that asserts, and I believe this. It asserts two things. One that which I already knew, which is like all of our plastic recycling programs, total bullshit.
Yeah,
it's literally bullshit. It's literally like you might as well tie a green string around your right pinky finger to solve environmental catastrophe. That's what you're doing, because so I guess there was a brief time 20 years ago where China's like, hey, you know what? We'll take like, I don't know, a couple of billion tons of plastic because we got this program to recycle it. And the Western world gave them 3 metric trillion tons of it. And they're like, no more. So like, we literally carefully separate our plastics and then we put it in the landfill. Mm-hmm. And we all go through this insane. Glass and aluminum is the only thing that gets recycled, but we're still separating like paper and so I already knew that. But the thing I didn't know is apparently there was a dedicated campaign amongst Big Oil to use this as a like, hey, people started thinking about plastic and it's ending up in the ocean. It's not biodegradable. And holy fuck, we need to get and plastic companies started being like, well, shit, our demand's going down. So they came up with like, we can recycle this shit. Mm-hmm. Even though it's never been true for the vast majority of plastics, it's just way cheaper and you get a better, because you can only like recycle the types of plastics you can like 2 or 3 times before they're so brittle. It's just unlike glass and aluminum, shit like that. So they did that just so people would continue to buy plastics and blithely not think about them going to landfills, even though they're going into landfills.
And to shift the onus of responsibility onto the consumer instead of
the individual rather than the system. Can we get, so my question is, can we get a Rick and Morty episode about that?
About recycling?
Because
where we all choose to opt into a system that is a sham to begin with, and that spins out and does something with some alien cult. I don't know. Why not?
Yeah, I would like to see, but that's the exact the kind of things we do where it's like, what do we, and so it took us 20 years to kind of instill that. So I think people are like, I didn't know that. If you're listening to this for the first time, great. I don't know what to do about it because there's literally nothing we can do about it, but it's something we should know about, right?
And I'm sure the writers
throw away plastics with a guilty conscience.
The writers are probably itching to do that recycling episode, right? I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, so wait.
There's an next episode is called a Rick Convenient Mort.
An Inconvenient Truth. Which play,
I've heard. Yeah, it could be something about environmentalism. In today's, so maybe they will talk about the non-recyclable plastics recycling that we're doing right now. But
interesting. Yeah.
If you just found out about the sham that is plastics recycling, please tell us about it at rickandmorty@baldmove.com. Or if you have any other Rick and Morty reference that you would like to talk about, or an insight into the episode, a reference we missed, whatever. rickandmorty@baldmove.com. We appreciate it. We'll be back next week to see if next week is the raging polemic against the mythical plastic recycling industry. I can't wait. But we'll be here Monday to talk about what happened on Sunday night. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See you later.
Pickle Me This is distributed and produced by Bald Move. All music featured on this podcast is from the Rick and Morty soundtrack, available from Sub Pop Records. Please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. To discover the many other great shows we do, please check out baldmove.com. If you appreciate what we do and want to directly support us, consider joining our club at patreon.com/baldmove to get access to exclusive bonus audio and video features. Finally, you can follow us on your favorite social media @baldmove. See you next time.